Chapter 9. Natural Grace, the Framework of Creativity, and the Health of Your Body and Mind. The Birth of Conscience. With animals, there are varying degrees of division between the self who acts and the action involved. With the birth of the conscious mind in man, however, the self who acts needed a way to judge its actions. Again, we come to the importance of that period of reflection, in which the self, with the use of memory, glimpses its own past experience in the present and projects its results into the future. The state of grace is a condition in which all growth is effortless, a transparent pause. Joyful acquiescence that is a ground requirement of all existence. Your own body grows naturally and easily from its time of birth, not expecting resistance but taking its miraculous unfolding for granted, using all of itself with great, gracious, creatively aggressive abandon. You were born into a state of grace, therefore, it is impossible for you to leave it. You will die in a state of grace whether or not special words are spoken for you, or water or oil is poured upon your head. You share this blessing with the animals and all other living things. You cannot fall out of grace, nor can it be taken from you. You can ignore it. You can hold beliefs that blind you to its existence. You will still be graced but unable to perceive your own uniqueness and integrity, and blind also to other attributes with which you are automatically gifted. Love perceives the grace in another. Like natural guilt, the state of grace is unconscious in the animals. It is protected. They take it for granted, not knowing what it is or what they do, yet it speaks through all their motions and they dwell in the ancient wisdom of its ways. They do not have conscious memory, again, but the instinctive memory of the cells and organs sustains them. All of this applies in degrees according to the species, and when I speak of conscious memory, I am using words that are familiar to you. I mean a memory that can at any time look back through itself. In some animals, for instance, the rising of such conscious memory is apparent, yet still highly limited, specialized. A dog may remember where he saw his master last, but without being able to summon the memory, and operating without the kind of mental associations that you use. His connections will be of a more biological nature and will not provide the leeway, pause, that your own mental conditions allow you. The dog does not recall joyful appreciation of his own state of grace from a past, nor anticipate a recurrence in any future. With the large freedom provided by the conscious mind, however, man could stray from that great inner joy of being, forget it, disbelieve in it, or use his free will to deny its existence. The splendid biological acceptance of life could not be thrust or forced upon his emerging consciousness, so to be effective, efficient, to emerge in the new focus of awareness, grace had to expand from the life of the tissue to that of the feelings, thoughts and mental processes. Grace became the handmaiden of natural guilt, then. Man became aware of his state of grace when he lived within the dimensions of his consciousness as it was turned toward his new world of freedom. When he did not violate, he was aware of his own grace. When he violated, it fell back into cellular awareness, as with the animals, but he felt consciously cut off from it and denied. The simplicity of natural guilt does not lead to what you think of as conscience, yet conscience is also dependent upon that moment of reflection that in a large measure sets you apart from the animals. Conscience, as you think of it, is caused by a dilemma and a misunderstanding of the conditions set upon your physical existence. Conscience arose with the emergence of artificial guilt. Artificial guilt is still highly creative in its way, an offshoot made in man's image as his conscious mind began to consider and play upon the natural innocent guilt that originally implied no punishment. The conscious mind is a maker of distinctions. It brings to the surface of awareness whole gestalts of previously unconscious material, then assembles and organizes it in ever-changing form. Through purposeful focus, a literally infinite amount of such data can be unconsciously sorted, then only the desired elements will emerge. The conscious mind is endlessly creative. This applies to all areas of conscious mind thinking. It is also the organizer of physical data, so natural guilt became the basis for all kinds of variations. These closely follow man's religious and social groupings. The latter are also the results of the aware mind's capacity to play upon, mix and merge, and rearrange perception and experience. Man is innately good. His conscious mind must be free, with its own will. He can, therefore, consider himself bad. He is the one who sets those standards in his own image. The mind is also equipped to see its own beliefs, reflect upon them and evaluate their results, so using this tool as it was meant to be used would automatically help man in recognizing both his beliefs and their effects. Part of this great permissiveness has to do with the fact that man is to realize that he creates his own reality. Free will is a necessity. The leeway given allows him to materialize his ideas, meet them in physical experience, and evaluate for himself their particular kind of validity. The animal has no such need. It nestles safely within the confines of its instincts while exploring other aspects of awareness with which man is not so intimately familiar. Yet natural grace and natural guilt are given you, and these will also grow more fully into conscious awareness. If you can sit quietly and realize that your body parts are replacing themselves constantly, if you turn your conscious mind into the consideration of such activity, then you can realize your own state of grace. If you can sense your thoughts steadily replacing themselves, then you can also feel your own elegance. You cannot feel guilty and enjoy such recognition, however, not on a conscious level. If you find that you are berating yourself because of something you did yesterday, or 10 years ago, you are not being virtuous. You are most likely involved with artificial guilt. Even if a violation occurred, natural guilt does not involve penance. It is meant as a precautionary measure, a reminder before an event. Do not do this again, is the only afterward message. I am placing these concepts within your time scheme because in your terms they were born out of it. But the fact is that all time is simultaneous. In a simultaneous time, punishment makes no sense. The punishment as an event, and the event for which you were being punished, exist at once, and since there is no past, present and future, you could just as well say that the punishment came first. We have mentioned reincarnation hardly at all, but see chapter 7, yet here let me state that the theory is a conscious mind interpretation in linear terms. On the one hand, it is highly distorted. On the other hand, it is a creative interpretation, as the conscious mind plays with reality as it understands it. But in the terms used, there is no karma to be paid off as punishment unless you believe that there are crimes for which you must pay, as indicated in chapter 2. In larger terms, there is no cause and effect either, though these are root assumptions in your reality. I use these concepts, again, because of their familiarity to vu. In the world of time, they appear as real. We return once more to that moment of reflection, for it is here that both causes and effects first appear. Dimly, in your terms, it can be traced by observing the animals that even now roam the earth, for each in its own degree, far less than yours, shows that reflection. In some, for all intents and purposes, it does not exist at all. Yet it is there, latent. The greater your period of reflection, the greater the amount of time that seems to pass between events. You seem to think that there is an expanse of time between reincarnational existences, that one follows the other as one moment seems to follow another. Because you perceive a reality of cause and effect, you hypothesize a reality in which one life affects the next one. With your theories of guilt and punishment, you often imagine that you are hampered in this existence by guilt collected in the last life, or worse, accumulated through the centuries. These multiple existences, however, are simultaneous and open-ended. In your terms, the conscious mind is growing toward a realization of the part it has to play in such multidimensional reality. It is enough that you understand your part in this existence. When you fully comprehend that you form what you think of as your current reality, all else will fall into place. Your beliefs, thoughts and feelings are instantly materialized physically. Their earthly reality occurs simultaneously with their inception, but in the world of time, lapses between appear to occur. So I say one causes the other, and I use those terms to help you understand, but all are at once. So are your multiple lives occurring as the immediate realization of your being in the natural extension of its many-faceted abilities. At once does not imply a finished state of perfection nor a cosmic situation in which all things have been done, for all things are still happening. You are still happening, but both present and future selves, and your past self is still undergoing what you think is done. Moreover, it is experiencing events that you do not recall, that your linear attuned consciousness cannot perceive on that level. Your body has within it the miraculous strength and creative energy with which, in your terms, it was born. You most probably take this to mean that I am implying the possibility of an unending state of youth. While youth can be physically prolonged far beyond its present duration, that is not what I am saying. Physically, your body must follow die nature into which you were born, and in that context the cycle of youth and age is highly important. In some ways, The rhythm of birth and death is like a breath taken and exhaled. Feel your own breath as it comes and goes. You are not it, yet it comes into you and leaves you, and without its continuous flow you could not physically exist. Just so your lives go in and out of you, you and yet not you, and a portion of you, while letting them all go, remembers them and knows their journey. Imagine where your breath goes when it leaves your body, how it escapes through an open window, perhaps, and becomes a part of the space outside, where you would never recognize it, and when it has left you it is no longer a part of what you are, for you are already different. So the lives you have lived are not you, while they are of you. Close your eyes. Think of your breaths as lives, and you the entity through which they have passed and are passing. Then you will feel your state of grace, and all artificial guilt will be meaningless. None of this negates the supreme and utter integrity of your individuality, for you are as well the individual entity through whom the lives flow, and the unique lives that are expressed through you. No one atom of air is like another. Each in its own way is aware and capable of entering into greater transformations in organizations, filled with infinite potential. As your breath leaves you and becomes part of the world, free, so do your lives leave you and continue to exist in your terms. You cannot confine a personality that you were to a particular century that is finished and deny it other fulfillments, for even now it exists and has fresh experience. As your moment of reflection gave birth to consciousness as you think of it, for both really came together, so then can another phenomenon and kind of reflection give birth to at least some dim conscious awareness of the vast dimensions of your own reality. The animal moves, say, through a forest. You move through psychic, psychological and mental areas in the same way. Through his senses the animal gets messages from distant areas that he cannot directly perceive, and of which he is largely unaware. And so do you. The you that you consider yourself is never annihilated. Your consciousness is not snuffed out, nor is it swallowed, blissfully unaware of itself, in some nirvana. You are as much a part of a nirvana now as you will ever be. To some extent, we have discussed your body and its composition of cells, in Chapter 7, for instance. All of the cells that now make up your physical form obviously exist at once. Imagine that you have many lives enduring in the same fashion. Instead of cells, then you have selves. I told you that each cell has its own memory. The self-memory is, of course, of far greater dimension. Think of the greater you, call it the entity if you want to, as forming a psychic structure quite as real as your physical one, but composed of many selves. As each cell of your body has its position within your corporeal space and boundaries, so each self within the entity is aware of its own time and dimension of activity. The body is a temporal structure. The cells, however, while a part of this body, are not aware of the entire dimension in which your consciousness dwells. They do not perceive all of the elements that are available even in three-dimensional experience, yet your present consciousness, seemingly so much more sophisticated, physically rests upon cellular awareness. So the entity or greater psychic structure of which you are a part is aware of much larger dimensions of activity than you are, yet in the same way its more sophisticated consciousness rests upon your own, and one is necessary to the other. In physical life there is a lapse while messages leap the nerve ends. See Chapter 5. In other terms and on other levels, this was represented in that moment of reflection that took place as man's consciousness emerged from that of the animals. Note, I did not say that man emerged from the animals. In still other terms and at different levels this lapse occurs, this moment of reflection extends itself, as the self leaps clear of physical form, even as the cell at one time deserts the body. In this regard now, and for the sake of our analogy only, think of the life of the self as one message leaping across the nerve cells of a multidimensional structure, again, as real as your body, and consider it also as a greater moment of reflection on the part of such a many-sided personality. I make these analogies because they are pertinent, yet I am aware that they can make you feel small or fear for your identity. You are more than a message, say, passing through the vast reaches of a super-self. You are not lost in the universe. In a book we must use words, but such analogies can, if you let them, conjure up within your imagination some feeling of your intimate relationship with all other reality. To some extent, the feeling of grace is your emotional recognition of the necessity, purpose and freedom, the innate appreciation, of your rightness and your place in existence. Remember also, In your terms now, the great gulf that separates you as a self from those cells that physically compose you. Your own present identity contains the knowledge and memory of all those simultaneous existences, even as the cells in their way retain memory of all those physical structures which they have formed. Consciously, because of your time concepts, you will interpret those simultaneous lives in reincarnational terms, one seemingly before the other. Your conscious ideas, expectations and beliefs direct the health and activity of the cells. Period. The cells do not have free will in your terms. They have the innate capacity to form other organizations, but not while affiliated with you. To leave you, they must change their form. To some extent, you determine their good health within the framework of their nature. They also help maintain yours. In terms of consciousness, the entity or greater you knows as much more than you know, as you know more than your cells. You, however, do have free will, for while the entity's psychic structure can be compared to the body, it is a part of and inhabits far greater dimensions. All of this may seem to have little to do with your personal reality, yet your daily experience is as connected with yourself or entity, abruptly louder, briefly, as it is with the cells of your physical form. There is an obviously intimate relationship between each cell and another. There is a constant give and take and grouping of awareness within the body's own miraculous corporeal structure. Your idea of reality and its experience is much different than that of any cell, yet each is interconnected. A group of cells forms an organ. A group of cells forms a soul. I am not telling you that you do not have a soul to call your own. Again louder, with a smile, you are a part of your soul. It belongs to you, and you to it. You dwell within its reality as a cell dwells within the reality of an organ. The organ is temporal in your terms. The soul is not. The cell is material in your terms. The self is not. The entity then, or greater self, is composed of souls. Pause. Because the body exists in space and time, the organs have specific purposes. They help keep the body alive and they must stay in place. The entity has its existence in multitudinous dimensions, its soul's free to travel within boundaries that would seem infinite to you. As the smallest cell within your body participates to its degree in your daily experience, so does the soul to an immeasurably greater extent share in the events of the entity. You possess within yourself all of those potentials in which consciousness creatively takes part. The cell does not need to be consciously aware of you in order to fulfill itself, even though your expectations of health largely influence its existence, but your recognition of the soul and entity can help you direct energies from these other dimensions into your daily life. You, dear reader, are in the process of expanding your psychic structure, of becoming a conscious participator with the soul, in certain terms, of becoming what your soul is. As cells multiply and grow, within their own nature and the physical framework, so do selves evolve in terms of value fulfillment. Souls are also creative psychic structures, ever changing and yet always retaining individual integrity, pause, and all are dependent one upon the other. Souls make up the life of the entity in those terms. Yet, the entity is more than the soul is. When you are aware of the existence of the entity and of the soul, you can consciously draw upon their greater energy, understanding and strength. It is inherently available, but your conscious intent brings about certain changes in you that automatically trigger such benefits. The results will be felt down to the smallest cells within your body, and will affect even the most seemingly mundane events of your daily life. You are growing in consciousness, therefore using it expands its capabilities. It is not a thing, but an attribute and characteristic. That is why our understanding and desire are so important. The processes initiated are beyond your normal awareness. They occur automatically with your intent if you do not block them through fear, doubt, or opposing beliefs. Long pause. Imagine yourself as a portion of an invisible universe, but one in which all the stars and planets are conscious and full of indescribable energy. You are aware of this? Think of this universe as having the form of a body. If you want to, visualize its outline brilliant against the sky. The suns and planets are your cells, each filled with energy and power but awaiting your direction. Then see this image exploding into your own consciousness, which is unbelievably bright. Realize that it is a portion of a far greater multidimensional structure, spread out in an even richer dimension. Feel the entity sending you energy as you send energy to your cells. Let it fill your being and then direct it physically any place within your body that you choose. If instead there is a physical event that you strongly desire, then use that energy to imagine its actual occurrence as vividly as you can. If you follow these directions and understand the meaning for them as given, you will find the results most startling and effective. Energy may be directed to any portion of the body, and if you do not block its actions by disbeliefs, that portion will be cured. Remember, however, if you hold the belief that you are a sickly person, that can hinder you. In that case, then, to change that particular kind of belief is your first concern. Pause. One of the purposes of this book is to tell you that no one is born to be a sickly person, so reading it can help you there. In your terms, if you believe that you chose illness to compensate for a past life deficiency, then it will help you to realize that you form your reality now in your present, and can therefore change it. Later we will discuss such matters as birth defects. Here we are speaking about conditions that can be physically corrected, but not the growth of an arm if you were born without one, for example, or the correction of other lacks in the body at birth. Your body is the basic product of your creativity on a physical level. From its integrity, all other constructions in your lifetime must come. Your greatest artistic endeavors must arise out of the soul and flesh, with hyphens. You create yourselves on a daily basis, changing your form according to the incalculable richness of your multitudinous abilities. Very positively, so out of the soul's resplendent psychic richness do you spring with your free will and desire. You in turn create other living creatures. You also produce forms of art, fluid living constructs that you do not understand, in terms of societies and civilizations, and all of these flow through your alliance with flesh and blood. This creativity, the strongest force within all reality, reaches from sources we have not as yet discussed in this book, down to the smallest atom and molecule. Your health is an extension of your creativity. So is your relationship with your mate, your boss, and the kinds of events with which you are uniquely familiar. I can see that my analogy comparing the soul to an organ within a multidimensional psychic structure of the entity is confusing you. We will clear it up by comparing the same properties, changing the word soul to read over soul. As earlier mentioned, and simply following the analogy, each self has its own soul within the oversoul, and the oversoul is itself a part of the entity's multidimensional structure. All of this material, I understand, is complicated. It is also difficult to explain. It becomes highly pertinent, however, in many instances of your lives, and affects your daily being and experience. I gave the information, in this chapter, purposely when I did, knowing that our visitor from the psychiatric clinic would be here. I want to discuss the state of grace in some detail and in different ways throughout this book. The young man who came here described in some detail the way in which LSD is used in therapy work with patients. The psychologists hoped to bring about a cure for various emotional difficulties, to literally introduce a state of grace. Period. The material that I have just given you is necessary for any understanding of the ways in which massive doses of LSD can affect the individual. Here we are dealing with an artificial and forced method of, hopefully, bringing about physical, psychic and spiritual illumination. Such enlightenment is supposed to lead to better health, self-knowledge, and provide an inner state of peace. Through such therapy, conscience is to be encountered and conquered once and for all. It is believed that the self must shed its ego and die symbolically in order that the inner self can be free. A discussion involving LSD, conscience, the death and birth of the self, mental health and spiritual illumination, may not seem applicable to those of you who have not taken drugs. But all of you do hope for illumination, greater vitality and understanding in one way or another, and wonder what methods might help you achieve these ends. Much of this book will be devoted to various techniques that will help you change your own reality for the better. The next chapter will, actually, deal with a further discussion of sonic subjects that have been mentioned in this one. How aware can you be, as an individual, of your own greater reality? Can you use such knowledge beneficially to improve your daily life? If you are in serious difficulty, can LSD, with therapy, help you? Can the chemical open up the doorways to the soul,